What if the places we dream of as paradise are actually prisons, and the places we fear are where we're most free? Standing in Iran at 3 a.m., listening to Yesterday echo through a luxury hotel lobby, while women with rose-colored fingernails scroll through smartphones beneath mandatory hijabs, this question becomes impossible to ignore. We spend our lives chasing perfect destinations, that beach, that mountain, that spiritual retreat, convinced geography holds the key to transcendence. But what happens when you actually visit the world's most contested paradises and discover they're simultaneously more beautiful and more broken than you ever imagined? The search for paradise reveals something uncomfortable. The Garden of Eden we're seeking might be the very thing destroying us. Every culture points to some promised land, yet these same sacred spaces become battlegrounds where neighbors kill each other over competing visions of heaven. The deeper you travel into these contested territories, the more you realize paradise isn't a destination at all. It's a state of mind that exists precisely where certainty dissolves and contradictions multiply. In Persian, the same word means both garden and paradise, a hint that heaven might be closer than we think. Yet Iran reveals how paradise can become its own cage. At the sacred Imam Reza Shrine in Mashhad, millions gather during festivals, pressing against silver-covered walls, weeping as they touch the saint's tomb. Then you meet the taxi driver who fled to England, married a Yorkshire woman, built a new life. Yet every summer he sneaks back into Iran illegally. "Even in England," he confesses, "I call my brother to hold up the phone at the shrine so I can feel it, hear it." A dissident who rejects Islamic governance, yet can't live without the culture it created. He fled paradise to find freedom, then abandoned freedom to taste paradise again. This is the human condition. We want escape and belonging simultaneously. Young Iranians in a stylish vegetarian restaurant say everyone wants to leave. They see America as utopia. Yet they acknowledge the paradox. The place you haven't seen is heaven. The moment you arrive, paradise evaporates. Kashmir was the paradise that bewitched generations. Snow caps, golden mustard fields, alpine peaks where Shah Jahan inscribed, "If there be a paradise on earth, it is this, it is this." Wandering through old Srinagar feels like moving through living canvases. Green wooden mosques, white-bearded elders, fair-skinned girls with Afghan green eyes. Drifting onto Dal Lake in a Shikara, all noise falls away. The beauty brings you close to tears. Then you remember, 4,000 disappeared souls, martyrs' graveyards, the palace of fairies converted to a paramilitary camp. As a Kashmiri poet wrote, "I am being rowed through paradise on a river of hell." Belfast monetizes its hatred. Black cab tours showcase partisan violence. The Crumlin Road Jail advertises weddings where 17 men have been executed, and history of terror tours visit bombing sites. Cross the modest bridge separating communities and watch Sean become Sam. Trump banners replace Irish flags. Royal cutouts decorate streets that moments ago celebrated rebellion. Yet, from grimy Cypress Avenue and Hindford Street, the bleak row houses where Van Morrison grew up, a lonely child listening to Radio Luxembourg fashioned heavenly transports. He made dingy tower blocks and broken glass into spiritual landscapes as magically illuminated as Avalon. Morrison believed childhood held memories of some purer world. By returning to this clenched neighborhood, he retrieved ancient visions. Between slow anthems about the garden, he recorded ill-tempered songs acknowledging no master plan, no nirvana, no promised land. Yet his ability to find light in broken streets offers moving reassurance. He didn't flee difficult circumstances, but worked to find within them the lost pearl of something better. Paradise isn't elsewhere. It's the capacity to see the sacred in the profane, to find heaven in the last place anyone would look. Belfast's tragedy isn't its violence, but its investment in maintaining division. Perhaps that's the most honest version of paradise, acknowledging its provisional nature, accepting that beauty and brutality share the same address. Broome defied easy understanding. horizontal waterfalls, 19 inches of rain in a day, 250 million-year-old crocodiles, dinosaur tracks woven into Aboriginal songlines. D.H. Lawrence felt unborn in Australia's pre-world, sensing strange old feelings waken the soul. This wasn't paradise as comfort. It was paradise as radical confrontation with forces beyond human control. The world's largest pearl oyster species, discovered off Broome's coast in 1883, brought prosperity through exploitation. Adventurers and escaped convicts beat, murdered, or abandoned hundreds of indigenous people once their labor was no longer needed. Even now, inhabitants lived at sharp angles to convention. The cabbie cleaned her car daily at 3 a.m. The bus driver proudly hadn't worn long pants in 3 years. Broome was thick with warnings. Box jellyfish, tropical ants, motel reception closing at 9:30 p.m. Traditional peoples self-controlled fires and made peace with 20 annual cyclones. This paradise actively resisted human presence. Walking back beneath gathering thunderclouds, I noticed figures emerging from roadside shacks and ran to bolt my door. This wasn't my place. It had been theirs for 60,000 years. Biblical downpours began, followed by electrical storms illuminating the mangrove swamps. This promised land reminded me that I remained illiterate here, an intruder in spaces thick with energy, alive, indifferent to my presence. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre wasn't restful or harmonious, just raw and untamable. Outside the nearby Basilica of Agony stood perhaps the most moving sentence in this city of words: "Please, no explanations inside the church." In Jerusalem, silence speaks louder than endless debates. My guide Amir had studied Judaism in Venezuela, Catholicism in Trinidad, and Hinduism along the Ganges. When asked about resolving conflict between two groups claiming the same land, he distinguished between problems, solvable, and issues, which must be lived with. "We've been coexisting for thousands of years. So long as no one tries to solve their problems, they'll be okay." When we confessed feeling more confused than when we began, he exclaimed, "Now you know what it's like to be an Israeli." Inside the church, I retreated to Christ's prison. A French teenager discovered the space, stared at the flickering candle, and began to sob. That fragile flame held more truth than all Jerusalem's arguments combined. Arriving in Ladakh, northern India, I felt transported to the beginning of the world. The vast plain stretched toward Himalayan snowcaps, with patches of green supporting white buildings sheltered by apricot trees. The Dalai Lama visited annually, reminding fellow Buddhists that paradise exists only in the middle of what surrounds us. Shangri-La exists exclusively in the imagination. Real life offers pleasures fantasy cannot. In Leh, I discovered half of Ladakh's citizens were Muslim. This wasn't just preserved Himalayan Buddhism, but a centuries-old Silk Road trading post that had always incorporated foreign influences while maintaining its essence. A British anthropologist explained that Ladakhis kept their land relatively pure by keeping doors open. I observed this wisdom in Funchak, my illiterate driver who had never left his nomad settlement until 4 years ago. His work with a travel agency allowed him to send his son to private school in Delhi. When the son joined us in his Nike shirt and baseball cap, fluent in English, it was he who insisted I circumambulate temples properly and prostrated himself before every Buddha. The worldly teenager devoted his summer vacation to learning ancestral traditions, embodying how Ladakhis understood that paradise isn't purity, but the capacity to remain rooted while embracing change. The British Garrison Cemetery in Buddhist Kandy offered the only true peace I'd found across troubled Sri Lanka. "Man appoints, but God can disappoint," read one worn gravestone. The ages shocked me. 6 months, 7 months, 26 years. They'd traveled so far to remake home in idyllic form, even shipping headstones from Britain on vessels that carried back cocoa, rubber, and tea. Here, I met Charles Carmichael, the caretaker, dark-skinned but British-named, speaking perfect English. His grandfather had impregnated a 15-year-old Hindu priest's daughter before abandoning her for Calcutta. Charles maintained this neglected place with pride, pointing out the memorial to a powerful colonial who left his fortune to all the mixed-race children in Sri Lanka, because he knew their lives would be difficult. This nominally segregated cemetery was ironically the least divided place on the island. The headstones told compressed life stories: scholars of Sanskrit, veterans of Napoleonic wars, chroniclers who contracted fatal diseases simply trying to know the country. In Varanasi, I watched the carnival along the river: a crow pecking seeds from a cow's cheek, sages playing cricket, backpackers mingling with locals. Walking past burning ghats at dusk, I confronted mortality, imagining loved ones turning to ash while children and dogs moved calmly among burning corpses. On my final morning, the city disappeared under thick fog. By the river, I could barely see 30 feet ahead, as smoke from funeral fires mixed with winter fog and pollution. Every figure looked like a visitor from another world. Here's what these contested paradises reveal: we're searching in the wrong direction. Paradise isn't the place without problems. It's the capacity to hold contradictions without breaking. It's the Iranian dissident who risks everything to return to what he escaped. It's Van Morrison finding heaven in Belfast's broken streets. It's Ladakhis sending their children to learn the modern world while ensuring they remember ancient wisdom. Stop chasing the garden. The paradise you're seeking exists in the mud beneath your feet, in the contradictions you're trying to resolve, in the fog that refuses to lift.